Hi guys, welcome to or welcome back to The Big Picture with your hosts, Skyla Dempsey.
Claire Bentley.
And for those of you who are just joining us, The Big Picture podcast is all about true stories and their events. Claire and I will watch a movie based on a true story, then we will get together and talk about how the events in the movie correlate or relate to the events of the true story. So, today in studio with us, we have a very special guest, Joel Pauls. He is my band teacher, was her guitar teacher.
Hi, everybody.
Yes, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you came from and like how you got to where you're at now.
Well, I was born in Iowa. A college professor and a counselor, private counselor. Mom is the counselor, dad's the professor, and we went from Iowa to Idaho. So from about the age of 8, I was officially an Idahoan. Oh. Grew up in Moscow, went to the University of Idaho and studied music education, and then had been teaching ever since, pretty much.
That's crazy.
Taught a little bit in Bremerton, Washington, and then in Lewiston,
okay.
And in Moscow, and now here in Assotin. So career has just been in both Idaho and Washington, and I love teaching instrumental and vocal music and guitar class and whatever else they can throw my way.
So was teaching instrumental classes, was that something you've always wanted to do, or did it kind of, you know,
come up out?
Yeah.
Not always, but from the time that I started playing in band, it was something that always interested me. I was also really into visual art, painting and drawing.
Okay.
So I had to make a choice in college of what I wanted to study.
What was the first instrument you played?
Drums. Well, no, actually, piano, which I quit. I quit lessons when I was, I think, probably in fifth or sixth grade. It was a decision that probably I regret now, but then got back into music the next year playing drums.
That's cool. It is very nice to have a band teacher or a music teacher in general to be in this episode with us, because this episode is on the movie Walk the Line. It's based on the true story of Johnny Cash and his life. For those of you guys who don't know who Johnny Cash is, I'm sorry for you. Johnny Cash is a very famous country singer. He's very musical. He has sadly passed away. He's also known as the Man in Black, because he always wore black tuxes all the time. That's pretty much all he wore. So, I have, in fact, never seen the movie Walk the Line. These two have.
Mm-hmm.
So, I am going to be talking a little bit more about the true events of Johnny Cash's life. Those two.
Okay.
Are going to be talking
about see exactly what I can remember. It's been a little while. But.
So, Johnny Cash in real life is a singer, and his wife, Juniper Carter Cash. She was played by Reese Witherspoon, right? And he was played by
Joaquin Phoenix.
That person. Don't know who that is. Okay.
I can't believe you don't know who Joaquin Phoenix is.
Do you know who Reese Witherspoon is?
Okay, yeah, you got a point.
My point. Anyway. So, Johnny Cash was pretty much a small town boy, blue collared. His dad worked very hard in the coal mines. His mom was a stay-at-home mom. He kind of grew up kind of the same as every kid those days. I mean, poor, living nickel to nickel, and it's kind of how it was for him.
Mm-hmm.
Pauls can probably relate to that. Calling you old. He doesn't care. He probably gets it a lot.
Yep.
Yeah.
Especially for me. I make it a point quite often to call him old. It's okay. No, he started music at a very young age, younger than us. Once he got bigger with music and stuff, he started drugs and alcohol, started popping pills, which is bad, which made his wife very, very upset. They had a son. His name was John Carter Cash. Yeah, I mean, he started getting really big into drugs and alcohol. His wife was very upset with him, as anybody would be. I mean, mm-hmm. that was pretty much a simple rundown of Johnny Cash and his life. I mean,
he was married before June.
Oh, he was? I did not know that one. Okay.
Yep, and
yeah,
so
I do remember that, yeah.
That marriage ended largely to do with his interest in music, and as his career was growing, he was on the road all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And On the Road is where he met June.
Right.
He was still married with his first wife while he met June, right? If I'm remembering right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's that. That's kind of the... We don't talk much about on the big true story part on some movies.
In your research about his life, did they talk much about the death of his brother? That was one thing that they kind of made a big deal about in the movie was...
Yes,
when he was young, he had an older brother.
Yeah, it kind of went a little bit over that. I don't know. I know that he did pass away, but I don't know how. So maybe you guys can kind of go over that.
Do you remember?
I don't remember. I'd have to re-look it over.
It was an accident at a lumber mill, or using a saw to cut lumber. I don't know if it was at a mill or if it was at their home, but...
Hold on. Now that I think of this, hold on. Wait. The boys were pretty young, and they had, the sawmill kind of, down by their house and everything.
I think it was down at their...
Down property. By their house, and it was in this old barn, and the brother kind of sent himself through the blade, didn't he?
Yeah, he cut himself really badly.
Okay,
yeah,
I have seen this movie when I was, six. Okay, I'm the name sounds so familiar. Like, while doing all my research, scenes from the movie popped up, photos of the scenes, and I'm like, I recognize this. So I remember... Bits and pieces. Maybe as we talk a little bit more about the movie, I'll remember more.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Oh my god. Okay, wait. So I do remember that part. I seen this. So then, when I seen this, I was like 6 or 7, 7 or 8. So I was very young. So
the movie sets up this relationship between John and his father,
mm-hmm.
as him not ever being good enough,
mm-hmm. right?
And that really had a lot to do with the relationship between his older brother and his father, who the older brother could do no wrong. Basically, he just was a really good kid. Obviously, the dad's favorite, and so when he died,
he blamed
Johnny's father blamed him in some ways for his brother's death, or he felt like it the wrong son was taken from him.
Yeah.
Right.
Which you should never feel that way.
So then that sets up this what do you call it, a block or a depression for Johnny later in life, that he could never really be good enough. He didn't feel like he was.
Yeah.
So he's always striving to be better, to impress people or impress his father, and that he never lived up to it. So then that led him to, to push himself more. And I think that's really the root problem of his relationship with his first wife and his relationship with drugs and alcohol, to kind of fuel that drive to keep going, right? Keep doing more dates, keep traveling, keep recording, keep writing. And so he had to really conquer those demons first to be able to be willing to stop the addiction problems too.
Yeah. I don't remember if I said it. I kind of have short-term memory loss today. The movie we are talking about is Walk the Line. I don't know if I said that. So.
Can't remember who did it either.
I think Paul's has the movie, so that's the movie. Beautiful. But yeah. So I think I have seen this movie just years ago. Okay, with the whole upset and feel like you can't, live up to someone, I have issues with this. I feel like I always have to be perfect. I feel like I always have to do everything correctly. If I mess up, I'm wrong. And We've seen it in band class. Paul's and I have both seen this in my band class that I felt like I was just feeling. And it's a true feeling. Like, a lot of people push it off as if it's themselves, they're just overreacting by themselves. People will push it off as you're trying to be center of attention, or and it's a real thing. Like, in things like this, as simple as being in band class and getting so frustrated, or being anywhere and getting so frustrated on what you are doing that it gets to the point where you don't want to do it anymore, it can lead to, sadly, drugs and alcohol, like it led for Johnny.
Because that stuff, like, kind of numbs it, just keeps you going.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think that's why a lot of people fall into it, is because, you know, maybe their home life wasn't the best, and so it's just something to take something away.
Yeah.
Kind of gives them a happy space.
Yeah, kind of. Not speaking from any experience, my parents would kill me.
Mine would too.
If I wasn't dead before that.
Mine would too.
But yeah, so I don't remember much from the movie other than what we've talked about. Later in the movie, what happens as we go back more into the movie?
So one of the big parts I remember is, I do remember him meeting June, and she, like, you know, he was married and stuff, and I'm pretty sure he was trying to make advances. I can't quite remember, like, he, you know, but
yeah, he was.
She
for was, sure.
Yeah, and she was.
And
trying
she
to
was move. Saying, "No way, man."
Yeah,
she was being loyal. He was not.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds and about right.
So yeah, I remember in the movie, then him and his wife get divorced, and June still was just like, "Whoa, man!" But yeah, and then. I do remember a whole lot of little bits and pieces.
He asked her to tour with him, with his band. So she was one of the artists that would be traveling with him and singing, and then he would occasionally ask her to sing with him on stage. Mm-hmm. But she's on the tour bus with all these guys, too, then, right, that are in the band.
That's crazy.
So he asked her to marry him several times, and she would just say no. No, no, mm-hmm. no. And finally, and this is I think it's documented on video, he actually did ask her to marry him in front of a live audience. It was in Canada, a show in Canada.
Yeah.
I want to say Niagara.
Yeah.
And in front of everybody, she finally said yes.
That's a lot of pressure, just to reject someone and, like...
You can't put someone on the spot like that. Like, yeah.
And
they said no. Like, okay, I can really...
if you use that as like leverage.
See, because... I hate to admit this. When my older sister was still living with us before she had moved out and anything, and I think... I did it up until, like, the day she moved out. I would want her to come hang out with me, but she would want to stay in her room, play on her phone, read her books, whatever. I want to hang out with my sister. So I'd be like, "Cuddle, you want to hang out with me?" She's like, "No." And then I'd say it out loud in front of my parents and be like, and then I'd go out to the living room in like 5 minutes. And then kind of be like, her door would be open. I'd be like, "Dakota, do you want to come play a board game with me?" And my mom would be sitting in the kitchen or doing whatever, being wherever. My dad would be there too. And then if she said no, my parents would be like, "Come on, just be nice and like hang out with your sister." So I dropped my weight. So I can't really say much. I would never ask someone to marry me several times and then like do it on stage to leverage them like that. No, I'm just gonna be petty with my sister like that. But I would never put like someone on the spot like that unless it's my sister.
He was the kind of person that could. Like, he was really good at setting a goal and then not taking his focus off of that goal.
Yeah.
And so I think the multiple times of asking really was just of not taking no for an answer was just a result of being so goal-oriented. And he knew that she was the one for him, probably before she did. I can't remember if they got married before he kicked his habit or after. I think it was after. I think she, like she was helping him break his addiction as a friend.
I think so, yeah.
Before they had a relationship.
Yeah.
And so he really, if that was the case, then he really did prove to her that he could clean his act up and and be worthy of, you know, being a good husband and father to their kids and all that. Yeah. So.
And outside of the movie, like, I feel personally that his songs that he wrote when he wasn't
clean and sober?
Yeah. I didn't know how to say that. Were good, but the ones that he was when he was clean and sober, they were just 10 times better to me. I don't know. Yeah, I liked him better. I love Johnny Cash. I have a poster of him up in my room.
Do you have a favorite song?
Actually, okay. You've probably heard the song Cocaine Blues by Johnny Cash.
I haven't actually heard that one either.
I'd have to hear it again.
Okay. I don't want to get copyrighted, but so we're not going to play it, but listen to it. Fun fact. I have a, like, fourth or fifth time great uncle who his name was Roy Hogshead. That's the name. Roy Hogshead. I actually have photos of him. I will put them up so you guys can see who it is. The song Cocaine Blues by Johnny Cash is actually originally written by my uncle Roy Hogshead. And Roy also wrote Slow Train Through Arkansas and a few other songs. But why I love Johnny Cash so much, probably because before Johnny Cash got really big in his music, my uncle Roy is actually the one who inspired Johnny Cash to go big. Because there's actually photos that I can pull up, and I will put up for you guys to see, of my uncle Roy Hogshead and Johnny Cash standing next to each other or in like a group before Johnny Cash was big, and my uncle was the one, like, they played together when Johnny Cash was just still very small on the music scale and everything, and then my uncle was like, dude, you're really good, you need to go big. And Cash was always like, no, I'm not going to do that. Like, he was kind of standoffish. And then my uncle kind of positively pushed him to the way of going big. And kind of, there's an article that in the thing said that Mr. Hogshead was the one who inspired me to be who I am today. And this was after he was cleaned up and he was sober and everything. And I recently found out that my uncle knew personally and played with, I obviously never met Roy, but it's my third great uncle. My third great uncle. Mm-hmm. It's my great grandma's uncle, which is cool. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like, this is crazy just to know, because I only found this out because of an assignment my sister had to do for school. And I'm like, that's awesome. Yeah. Like, my uncle, my third uncle is, like, this great musician, and I'm like, and I think that's why.
Composer.
Yeah, right. And I'm like, and yeah. I think this is why I was, like, so determined now to get good at music, because seeing, like, it's not in just the family, like, music doesn't just go back into the family that I have been alive to see, like, it goes back generations on generations, like. My grandma is musical. You know my grandma. She's very musical. My mom's very musical. I'm clearly very musical. And, like, it just, I don't know. It was cool when I found out, because, like, hey, Skyla, this person is our third uncle, and he personally knew Johnny Cash, so I hang out all the time. And I'm like, what? I'll have to pull up photos. He's pretty cool. We're going through photos of, like, when my... from, like, at my Grammy Pat's and my grandpa's house. And there's, like, just totes on totes and totes on totes of photos of, like, just random things. And last weekend and this weekend, my mom and her sisters, and this weekend I'm going with them, have gotten together to look at their photos to kind of, like, pick what, like, family they go to. And they found, like, 6 or 7 photos of Roy. And I'm like, that's crazy. That's my uncle. Like, that's crazy. Like, and I never seen half of these photos. I don't even see half of these photos. I don't even think my Grammy knew was printed. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just cool. I mean,
Do you remember from the movie side of his life story, kind of how he got his start recording?
That part I'm still a little fuzzy about. I remember a lot more of when he got super popular, mm-hmm. and when he was trying to overcome his addictions to alcohol and drugs. A big part I do remember was when him and June were like doing their, like they were both singing on stage together, where he like had too much to drink and so he kept slurring his words and stuff, and she's trying to, you know, help him because, I mean, that's bad for image. I think they were friends at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so she's just trying to do what she can to help him, but he's just like, you know.
That was kind of his low point, right, where he just collapsed on stage and
and
woke up in the hospital.
Yeah.
But his, in the movie, his first, like, recording experience is really at the Sun Records studio with Sam Phillips. Remember, Sam Phillips was the guy that discovered Elvis.
Okay, right?
He's the guy in the little studio in Tennessee. I can't remember if it was Nashville or somewhere near.
I want to say Nashville, but don't quote me on it.
So Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, lots of other kind of early rock artists, or rockabilly artists, were on his roster of musicians that he recorded. And so Johnny shows up to the recording studio, walks in, and basically announces that he wants to record for, you know, for Sam Phillips. And Sam's like, "Who are you?" Right? And so he brings his band in and they start recording a gospel song. Right? And Sam basically stops him after a few bars and says, "What else you got?" Right? And the thing that Mr. Phillips was looking for was what would make Johnny Cash a unique artist, right? He's heard all the gospel tunes already and everybody already knows them, and if you're not singing them with passion, like, it's the last thing you could do before you die, right? In fact, I think he says to Johnny, if you had one song to sing before you met your maker, right, to show or talk about everything that was important to you in life, what would that song be? And so then Johnny switches gears and plays a song that he was working on or learning when he was in the Air Force. I can't remember what the song was, but it was basically about kind of that depressed feeling of being alone, and that kind of is what set the tone for a lot of kind of his darker style of music, right? I hear the train a-coming, I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. It was kind of all this
And isn't
outlaw music.
I could be mixing it up with a whole other artist, but what song is it? It's like, is it The Devil's Gonna Cut You Down or something like that? Is that Johnny Cash? I think it is.
Devil Went Down to Georgia?
No.
No,
that's not. That's
I'm like, if you're thinking about that song, you are way
No.
Devil's Gonna Cut You Down. Oh, my God.
So anyway, that song that he sang convinced Sam Phillips, this guy has something. And so from there, they put out an album. They recorded an album. He got on tour with Elvis and with Jerry Lee Lewis, which gave him his break, but that's also kind of what led to his exposure to the drugs and alcohol. We know that was a problem for Elvis as well.
It's a problem for a lot of, like, big-time artists.
Well, back then.
Now
they're just all weird, and
there are some interesting
ones. There's some interesting country artists now.
There is one that...
Country Hayes.
Yeah, there's a few that, like, if I heard the... When hearing the name, I would have never thought they'd sound country at all.
Hunter Hayes, like... Anyway, I don't know. Yeah. That kind of... It kind of shows you, like... I don't know where I'm going with this. Like, it kind of just shows you, like, what that stuff kind of does to you. Like, it makes and breaks relationships.
And I bet that the pressure of touring and, like, having to impress all these people sure did not help, you know, alcohol. Because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are, like, they use alcohol to calm themselves. And so, you know, having, like, the anxiety of going out and singing to, like, a massive crowd of people, that's a lot of pressure. And so I feel like that's another big push on.
Like, one thing that, like, with the, like, alcohol and, like, having to go out and approach people, you probably know who Ron White is, the comedian.
I don't know Ron White.
When, and if you guys ever get the chance, you need to, you two and everybody listening needs to watch the movie The Blue Collar Comedy Show. It has Ron White, Larry the Cable Guy.
I've heard of him.
Jeff Foxworthy and one other guy. I don't remember who else the other one was. But he, when he goes on stage, he's smoking a cigar and he has like a glass of whiskey, and that's all he ever has with him. And then you see like Larry the Cable Guy and Jeff Foxworthy and the other guy go up with water, and you're just like, sir. Like, it kind of shows that, like, oh, sorry. They call it liquid encouragement for a reason.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a big fan of Johnny Cash. I have pics that have his face on them. It's embarrassing. I have a bunch
of... The movie doesn't really talk much about his life after he broke his addictions and after he and June were together. That's kind of where it ends.
Yeah.
So after that, what happened to him?
Oh, God.
He and June continued to perform together, right?
Yeah.
And what, one of my favorite songs, at least that's from the movie, is the one that they sing together as a duet. I think it's called Jackson. Mm-hmm. We got married in a fever.
Yeah.
Hotter than a pepper sprout.
Okay. Yeah. I have always hated when Paul's would sing Johnny Cash song, because he tries to sound like Johnny Cash, and it's funny because you're like...
Yeah, we did Hurt, right? When, in a guitar class, we sang. We did play Hurt.
Yeah, we did. My guitar class.
And I think he recorded that maybe 2 years before he died.
Yeah.
So he was an old man, but still.
You're an old man.
Well, yeah, older than me. Still recording.
Wow.
Still drawing musical inspiration from other artists. I think that song Hurt was a Nine Inch Nails song.
Yep.
Is that Trent Reznor? Is he the... or lead guitarist and singer or whatever.
I think so, yeah.
And I think I remember reading Reznor saying that he really liked that version that Johnny did, and kind of it was probably his favorite version.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So somebody that, you know, that can bring his background and experience with addiction and a broken life, and being able to sing a song like that, which is really about addiction. But from the perspective of having conquered it and come through it, makes it a really rich performance.
Mm-hmm. And that, like, it does. And, like, that has a big thing on music in general. Like, I seen this video. I don't remember what video. But it's of this guy who is up, like, doing a speech in front of people. And he sees this man in a crowd. And he's, like, and he's a music teacher. We have 20. Okay, yeah, whatever. He's a music teacher, and he asks the teacher to sing a gospel song. So he sings a gospel song. I don't remember what song it was, so he sang it, and it was great. But then he asks the exact same man to sing the exact same song, but as if he was singing it at his brother's funeral sitting in his church.
I've seen that.
And he sings it more passionate, like,
yeah, there's so much more behind it.
So, like, because if you're just singing to sing, then yeah, you can sound good, you can sound bad, like, whatever. But if you're singing for a purpose, like, you're singing because, there's a purpose behind singing. I think we see it in Miss Off's class.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was for one of our assignments. I'm thinking about it because it was the trying to find our purpose in life or whatever.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. But it just shows that, like, to take another person's song and put passion from, like, your past behind into it, it just makes the song 10 times worse or 10 times.
Yeah, it just
changes.
It puts so much more into it because it means more to you than, I mean, yeah, singing. Yeah. That does mean a lot to a lot of people. But when there's, like, a story or something behind it and something that influences it, it just makes it a lot better.
Yeah.
That's really what got him to start, right? Yeah. Sam Phillips was being able to do that, to channel that passion from his life or depression from his life or whatever that feeling is. And I think as the audience listening to it, that's what that's what draws you to it, is when it becomes real for you, or when you can find meaning in the song.
Yeah.
So artists who can convey that are the ones that people are drawn to.
Yep.
Yeah, I feel like that's...
That's why he had like a 50-year career.
Yeah. That's why he's really, really big. And I find it kind of convenient because most of his songs, or a lot of his songs, are talking about like depression and all that. He is called The Man in Black. Black, nowadays at least, if you wear too much black.
Hey.
That's all she owns is black clothing. I can't complain because I'm wearing black.
You
pants.
Wear black.
I love wearing black.
It matches with everything.
All of our band shirts, except for percussion, are black, which is stupid, but whatever. We need to get new band shirts. They're old, and I know you wash them.
That's a topic for another podcast.
No joke. I know you wash them, but no matter how many times you wash them, they still smell like 50-year-old clothes that have been shoved up in the top of a closet for like 100 years. That's what they smell like. They smell... They stink. they stink. Hence why I carry a bottle of perfume with me to all of our band trips. Because they stink. No, I think with that...
Point taken.
If the only thing you get away from this, Paul's, is...
New shirts.
Get new band shirts. Take it. Because they're bad. No, I think that was a good episode, I mean.
Yeah.
I feel like that was good. Yeah.
What was the last movie that you guys did your...
We did ours on the Hacksaw Ridge.
Hacksaw Ridge.
About Desmond Doss.
It's a World War II movie.
That's what I was going to ask. Is war
movie. Yeah. We interviewed Rick Dempsey.
Mm-hmm.
My dad. Yeah.
All right. Shout out to Rick.
You don't like that?
Did he watch the podcast? Did he see the...
I don't know. He might have. I mean, we put him up on YouTube. So he might have.
Is this going on YouTube?
Yeah. Awesome.
See, I'll check it out.
Okay.
See how we did.
We did.
Please don't fact check us.
Just don't. Like we said in our thing, you learn things that will help you for the real world. Like, don't get addicted to drugs and alcohol, kids. Stay in school. It sounded like every, like, inspirational speech ever. Stay in, kids.
Stay in, kids. Okay.
Stay in school, kids. No, but then you also learn things that you don't need to know. Like, random things. I think in one of our episodes... we were talking about something and an animal came up in one of our episodes and I spit out a random fact about this animal. I'm like, oh, fun fact. And Claire and Shiloh look at me and they're like, okay, anyway.
And then in our Conjuring episode, we went way off.
Way off topic. We're talking about the Conjuring house and the Parrot family and then we just like shoot off onto this limb about Abigail the doll. When I was younger, I sent Abigail... said to me.
Oh, wait, no, it was Annabelle.
Annabelle.
Yeah, there we go.
I was going to say, that is no, but, like, yeah, you learn things you need to know and learn things that you necessarily... That should really go in one ear and out the other ear that you don't really need to listen to, but, yeah.
Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on such a short
notice. Check out the movie.
Yes.
It's a good movie.
Listen
good
to some Johnny Cash.
Definitely.
Definitely. Yeah, I think with that...
Good. Is this
episode
7?
This is episode 7. We hit our 7th episode.
Yep, there
Yay!
We go.
With that, I think that is take 1, episode 7. Walk the line. Cut.